All right, welcome to the Chronic Podcast off-season series. I'm your host, Ralph Marlborough. It's early in the week, and we're joined by Andrew Juge of the Saints Nation. Andrew, you don't have any game tape to review, but we do have some Saints news, a little bit. Doug Marrone, he got hired as a Buffalo coach. I don't know why going 25-25 at Syracuse gets you an NFL job. But people, I mean, Sean Payton gave him good write-up in the Times-Picayune saying he's ready. He did a really good job with the Saints offensive line. I mean, the Saints offensive line was good, you know, before Cromer got there. The interesting thing is, Doug Marrone, in his press conference at Buffalo, I'm a nerd and a loser, I watched it. He said, I want coordinators that have NFL experience and have run their side of the ball because I'm not going to be calling plays. I want an offensive my offensive coordinator is going to call plays. My defensive coordinator, he's going to run his thing, and I'm going to be overseeing it and coaching the coaches, is how he put it. So to me, that means if I'm Doug Marrone, I'm making a run at Cromer or I'm making a run at Carmichael for the Saints. Your thoughts? Your thoughts on if one or both of them would go to Buffalo?
I don't think so. I don't think either of them would because, you know, first of all, Carmichael, he can't offer him anything that the Saints don't offer him already.
Pile of money?
At best, he's offering him a lateral move. I guess you could argue that there's a couple guys that are considered odds-on favorites over him to get it. But being looked at by the Bears and being interviewed as a head coach for an NFL team is a big deal. And so, you know, I don't think Carmichael wants to take a step back. You know, I think he feels like he's pretty close right now to landing a premier job. So, I think there's low risk with him. With Cromer, I mean, I think he'd be stupid to let Cromer call the place. I mean, I think Cromer has shown that he's an excellent, offensive line coach. He's shown that he's a poor head coach, and I don't know that he's ready or prepared to install an offense on a brand new team and be able to call play successfully with mediocre players. That's what the Bills have right now. So, you know, if he were offered the job, should he take it? Absolutely. I mean, it's a step up, and he's never going to be the offensive coordinator for the Saints. So, based on that, I think, you know, he would maybe be well served to take it. But again, he's been really successful with the Saints, and it's kind of the same thing. You know, it's, you don't want to move laterally to a team with a roster that has weaker players, that has a mediocre, you know, unit, where with the Saints, you know, next year he can send Jarry Evans to the Pro Bowl again, maybe Bushrod. I mean, maybe Bill Puente, he's a rising player. So, you know, maybe Ben Grubb. So you've got players there that have the potential to go to the Pro Bowl in an offensive line that produces, that's only going to boost his resume. So I'd be surprised, honestly, if either left, but Marrone has got some familiarity with those guys, so I'm sure he'll make a run at him. But for me right now, I mean, you look, Rob Ryan got fired today. I think that's a no-brainer because the Bills actually have some talent on defense, and you know, he may be able to produce with that. So I look at that immediately as a candidate for the Bills, and I'm sure they'll make a run at him.
Wait, who got fired today?
Rob Ryan with the Cowboys.
Oh, Rob Ryan. I was thinking Rex. Yeah. I think you're right. And look, you know, head coach. Look, everybody cares about money. You know, from Nick Saban to you to me, we all care about money. So money does matter. But I think money for coaches, they don't really start to really worry about it until they get a head coaching job. Because if you're Aaron Cromer, you're probably working 70 hours a week and you're making a couple hundred thousand with the Saints, maybe even, I don't know, maybe 400 to 600,000. It's not like you get to enjoy all that money anyway. Coaches like them, they're so driven, they want the head coaching job. And like you said, Aaron Cromer, maybe he should take it. But to me, Andrew, they are both probably one more really good Saints season from getting a head coaching job. Like, they're starting to knock on the door. And if the Saints bust out and go 12-4 next year, I could see a college team or an NFL team going after them. Especially, they've both interviewed for Boston College. I could see a team like on the East Coast wanting Aaron Cromer. And Aaron Cromer's a young-looking guy. I mean, maybe he'll be a good fit at a college coach. You never know. So I just think you go to Buffalo. I mean, Buffalo's a freaking wasteland. And going to Buffalo and being mediocre will do 10 times as much damage as Aaron Cromer going 2-4 with the Saints.
I mean, look, there's a long list, Ralph, of examples of places that coaches stay away from. I mean, numerous college coaches that have refrained from going to the NFL to avoid the kind of death march situation, you know. And you know, you go to Buffalo, it's a buzzsaw. I mean, why do you think the Jaguars struggle to get? I mean, they've gotten second-rate coaches that have already failed in the NFL, like Malarkey, because they can't land anyone else. I mean, look at the Saints. If Sean Payton didn't want to go there, he desperately wanted to go to the Packers and really didn't want to go to the New Orleans because it was a crappy situation. Katrina had just happened. You know, there were questions about the Superdome, questions about the fan base, questions about the city. And, you know, now that's an extreme case, but a lot of coaches are like, you know, I'd rather stay put than go into a crappy situation. And, you know, I'll hopefully, you know, and a lot of these college coaches, you know, they're successful. You look at Kelly with Oregon, he decided to stay there another year because, you know, the NFL jobs that were presented to him, he just felt like they weren't the right situation. So, you know, I think a lot of these coaches can afford to be picky. And, you know, in Sean Payton's case, I mean, if you get a head coaching job, you got to take it. If you're not a head coach and you get that opportunity, I don't care where it is, you have to go for it because the salary and the opportunity is just too good.
Yeah.
But I feel
although
like
Sean Payton did turn down Al Davis for the head coach job of the Raiders.
Yeah, so, you know, I mean, even then, you know, again, it's a situation who you have to work with. So there's no question about it. You know, I think I'd be surprised to see the Saints lose many assistants to Doug Marone.
Yeah. I mean, it'll be interesting. The Bears have interviewed like 20 people for that job. I think you interview tomorrow. So if you get hired, make me like a vice president of something.
Dude, you're my defensive coordinator.
Yeah, I know, right? I read Spencer Hall from Every Day Should Be Saturday, and he had his like, you know, college football's over, what am I going to do now? And he had a couple interesting things on his list to do, and I'm going to steal them from him. He's like, I want to learn blocking schemes. So I have bought myself a book on Kindle, and I am going to learn offensive line blocking schemes in the off season, and get like 10% more wonky. So it'll be 10% less jokes and 10% more blocking schemes for my columns. You know, and look, I said it in, you know, my column. If the Saints lose coaches, it will damage them terribly going into 2013 because Sean Payton's not coming back till after the Super Bowl. I mean, it's just not happening for whatever reason. So I mean, they hopefully nobody will leave, and I think you're right. I think they're probably not going to leave, and like I said, I think they're a couple of years away, which is really good for the Saints because say what you want about the defensive staff and Spagnuolo and all that, but that offensive staff is good. And, I mean, it may not be as good as it was, you know, last year because Curtis Johnson was really good. I mean, when you had Curtis Johnson and Cromer and Carmichael, I mean, Andrew, I would put those three assistants against any staff in the NFL as far as offensive minds.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, I still think Henry Ellard's a solid receivers coach, you know, maybe not on Curtis Johnson's level. No, I still think Cromer has done, you know, he whiffed as a head coach, but that was a horrible situation for him.
Yeah, I don't necessarily think teams will hold that against him, Andrew. And I could even see him in an interview with a team, if he's a charismatic guy, sort of flipping it around and making it a positive. Because he could say, look, yeah, I was an interim coach for 6 weeks, and you know, it didn't go as well as I had hoped, but I have that experience. All these other people that you are interviewing, they have never been on the sideline and run it. you think you know, but you don't know until you're actually doing it. And I got 6 weeks of it, and I know now what it takes. And before, I didn't have any idea what it was like to be on the sideline and have the challenge flag in my pocket, and everybody's looking to you when the shit goes wrong. But I've done it for 6 weeks. You know, so
and you should run it. You should write his interview speech.
I should be like a life coach. You know, so we'll
no,
see.
How, saying, if I get hired, Ralph, for the Bears job, and my interview's next week, I just want to tell you, you'll be my defensive coordinator, and I want to throw this out there right now that I'm bringing back the Fetch Monster. And he will be my equipment manager.
He will be the Fetch Monster. You're bringing him back. I like it. Let's get to. You did your final grades of the year, so this is kind of a look back. Andrew, and we were talking before the show started, you had some really, really interesting things about the grades and just some stats and some overall feel. Give before we get into individual players, give me the bullet points that you were giving me before we kicked off the show today.
Well, I think it was interesting that of the 35 returning graded players, so obviously, you know, of a roster of 53, there was some changeover. There were some new players graded. But of 35 guys that were graded last year and graded again this year, 25 of them had worse grades than the previous year. And, you know, you're comparing a 13-3 team to a 7-9 team, so you expect that. That's not a huge surprise. But some of the disparities were pretty glaring now. I wonder if in my old age and my kids a year older, so maybe I've just gotten more moody and a little angrier and a little more bitter. So maybe I'm harder on the Saints than I used to be in terms of grading. But so only 10 guys graded better, and of the 10 that graded better, most of them were marginal. You had a couple guys that had significant improvements. Interestingly enough, the best grade was Morstead, which you'd expect. His grades were much lower than last year. Most people would say, how can that be? That's crazy. He almost broke the net average. But if you remember last year, he actually broke an NFL record, 2 years ago, and that was the kickoff record. And he didn't kick off as well this year, and so I think that was maybe part of it. Anyway, he was still the top-graded player on the Saints. Number two is actually Garrett Hartley.
Wow.
And I know that there's a lot of negative sentiment about Hartley, but he actually ended the year 18-22 on field goals. I'm sure we all remember a few kicks that make us angry, particularly the Packers game. But overall, he had a very, very solid season as well. So those two graded out great. And obviously some players graded out not well at all.
Yeah, well, to be fair to Hartley, the kick in Green Bay, it went from what? It was a 47-yard field goal, and he drilled it down the middle, and then they had the – or was it a – it was a 42 – it was a 42-yard
field goal. It went from 43 to 48 or something like that.
No. Well, it was a holding penalty, so it went from 43 to 53, right?
Oh, you're right, yeah.
Because they got Dave Thomas. So, I mean, that was not – you can bang on him if you want, and you know you're a kicker, you got to make that kick. If you want to bang on him for the Dallas kick that he missed from like 30 yards, where the Saints went on like a 5-year drive, you can bang on him for that. But I thought Hartley was okay. You know, I mean, he was solid.
I mean, his career average of makes is outstanding, and I believe he was just above that career average this season. So, and we got 16 games out of him. So. I don't get it. I don't get the negative thoughts surrounding Hartley. I personally thought he was very solid this year.
Oh, I'm sorry to interrupt you. Keep going if you can remember what you were.
Some of the grades were poor. But you know, as you would suspect, Breeze, Vilma, Patrick Robinson and Jimmy Graham were some of the ones that had major, major drop-offs.
Yeah, I mean, what about the – let's talk about the defense. I'm sure that was fun doing your season final grades.
Here's kind of how I view my grades. And, you know, I've gotten complaints about this in the past. Like, you can't compare apples to apples with – you know, a school GPA. In other words, if you're really smart, you graduate with a 4.0 or a 3.87. You know, players, you know, the way my grading scale works, that no player is going to be that high because it assumes you get an A every time. And in the NFL, it's impossible to have an A performance each week. So the way the grading scale works, anything over 3.0, I consider outstanding.
Yeah.
And there were several people that had that last year, and this year only Hartley and Morstead had it. Anything over 2.5 is solid. You know, so that you're basically saying that's C-plus consistently or better. Now, when I start the grades, every player starts at a C. And I'm like, okay, that's average. And so if they have a good play, I bump them up to C-plus and then B-minus and then B.
Yeah.
And if they have a negative play, I bump them and tick down. And so, but they all start at C. And so anything, I feel like, you know, C is a 2.0. So anything above that is okay. But I feel like anything above 2.5 is a guy that's consistently getting above C. And so, you know, I feel like a guy for a whole season that has a GPA, you know, above 2.5 has been pretty well. Anything below 2.5 starts to get pretty poor. Anything below 2.0 is obviously piss poor. So the highest graded defensive player, no surprise, was Lofton. And he was like in the 2.7. So, that's pretty low for to have your highest graded guy, around 2.7 was pretty disappointing. But defensively, Ralph, the thing that I thought was most interesting was of the four lowest qualified graded players in my, when I say qualified, I mean, they had to play at least four. They had to have at least four games where I graded them because, you know, if a guy plays one game and gets an A, that's not fair to compare him to everyone else. So, or if he gets an F after one game, you know, it's not fair to say he was the worst player on the season. So, of the qualifiers, the three of the four worst were cornerbacks. And once again, that kind of alerted me to, yes, the pass rush is bad and yes, that exposes them. But I actually feel like this defense's problem is cornerback play and cornerback depth more so, maybe even than the linebackers or the pass rush. All of which was admittedly bad. But those people were Corey White, Patrick Robinson, and Johnny Patrick. And Johnny Patrick, I believe, was the lowest graded player on the team. So that to me is pretty alarming. And they're going to have to do something in the offseason to correct that.
Yeah. But when we talked about it during the year, you know, you said, look, the 0-4 start, it was a lot of things, you know, into it, obviously. But one of the main on-field things was Corey White was playing. And they were just – I mean, I forgot how you laid it out, but how you explained it after a couple of weeks. But basically, interrupt me if I'm wrong, but basically your gist was quarterbacks were coming to the line – and looking where Corey White was and basically pointing at him, laughing, and then throwing towards him.
that's essentially it.
So it doesn't surprise me, but you know, and it, look, the thing is, Curtis Lofton, he was a really, really good acquisition for the Saints, and he's a guy that if the Saints had a couple of blue chip people around him or in front of him, he'd be a really, really good player, and he'd look even better. And he'd probably – you'd probably bump him up. He's probably, to me, Andrew, like a – like if you have – if he's like the third best guy in your defense, he's pretty good, and he'll look like a Pro Bowl player, especially like if you slide him between two really good linebackers or you put two really good ends in front of him, he'll look really good. But with the Saints, he's their best guy, so he looks like a B-minus player, which is really good on the Saints' defense.
Yeah. No, I mean, he's the best player on the worst defense in NFL history. So.
Well, you should call, you know, gets angry, who dat mad. He's, you know, don't say worst defense in NFL history. Say they gave up the most yards in NFL history. Because worst defense, that's an opinion.
Right. Well, which is universally viewed as the worst defense in NFL history. Yeah. The angry who dat, it lives in a different universe where, you know.
Yeah.
The statistics that apply to, you know, football amongst anyone that watches it are suspended.
Well, I think I like the way Wang put it in his last post. You know, you can say, are they the worst ever? Or they're the worst in Saints history, and they gave up more yards than the Jason David defenses, than the 1-15 defense from 1980. All of them, you know? So, but we love the angry Houdat, and if Atlanta makes us all happy this weekend and loses, he's coming on the podcast next week, and I will just say, go right ahead, and he will just vent and laugh for 30 minutes, and then I'll hit stop, and I'll upload it, and it'll be glorious.
Yeah, you should do it like, you know, those guys used to do with Buddy D, where they'll ask their question, and they say, all right, I'll hang up and listen.
Yeah.
You kind of do it like that, like, Dominic, I'm giving you the floor, and I'm just going to hang up and let you run with the podcast.
Yeah, exactly. That's a good idea. Whatever the reverse is, I'll hang up and listen. Whatever the reverse of that is when the host does it. Anything else about the grades? The funny thing was that I saw, not funny, but interesting thing was, I always thought Brian De La Puente struggled, but according to Pro Football Focus, he had the Saints' highest grade on run blocking. So has he become a guy, Andrew, that last year he got the job kind of by default because Tennant was a bust as a draft pick, you know, the fifth round guy, but he was a guy the Saints were grooming and it didn't work out to replace Goodwin. Olin Cruz had a fork in him and he just packed up and quit. So it was kind of like, okay, it's your job, guy. Is he a guy that you are completely comfortable with going into 2013 and saying he's the guy?
Oh, absolutely. Especially with their cap problems and the fact that he's cheap labor. I mean, he's an undrafted free agent and he's costing him $300,000 a year. So, absolutely. He's played well. I didn't have him graded as high as PFF, you know, because when I grade – now, PFF goes to a further level of detail than I do. They grade players on how they are run blocking and how they are pass blocking independent of each other. I rope it all in together. You know, how is he playing in a game as a whole? And I grade the game as a whole, including both facets. So, you know, he made some mistakes in pass protection and run blocking, you know, mostly in pass protection that, you know, cost him to get a worse grade. But, he did great. I think third best on the line. He was behind the two guards, but ahead of Bushrod and Streif, of course. So he had a decent year, and I've got no beef with him. I think the offense as a whole is fine. You know, they underperformed compared to last year, but I really do believe they're a healthy Nick Tune and maybe another speedster. You get rid of Henderson, and you bring everybody else back. And they're fine, you know, and I think the next question really is they're four deep at running back. You know, I don't really count Kadet because he's more of a utility player, but they're four deep at running back. I wonder if it's time to part ways with either Ivory or Ingram, pick one of the two and see if you can't get a defensive player, you know, that's worth something in exchange.
I don't think you can get I don't think you could get anything for Ivory. Saints fans really like him, but if another team, they're going to be like, we're not giving you anything for Ivory. He's a restricted free agent. Well, maybe we'll sign him to an offer sheet that you can't match. It'll make it really difficult. But we're not giving you anything for him. He's injured all the time. You know? Now, for Ingram, I think you could get you might be able to get a guy that's been a disappointment for another team. Like they say, hey, we have this corner, or we have this defensive end who's kind of been a disappointment for us. Ingram has been a disappointment for you. Let's swap disappointments.
I don't know. I feel like they could maybe get a third or fourth round pick. I mean, first round pick value, or he was a first round pick. So I think that returns third or fourth round value. I think he showed enough this year that teams believe, you know, the kind of the Dave Cariello theory that, you know, if you commit to him and you keep giving him the ball, eventually he's going to get better.
I mean, I could see a team like Green Bay maybe If they, you know, if they go to San Francisco, I mean, I know they had a running back. I don't even know his name. He looked pretty good against Minnesota. I mean, I guess if they really would struggle against San Francisco and in the running game they feel like that would kill them, maybe they'd say, hey, we'll give you a third or fourth round pick for Ingram, which, you know, depending on what the commissioner does, Andrew, you know, if he says, hey, Saints, I'm giving you back the second round pick, but I'm taking away a third or I'm taking away a fourth, depending on what he does, I'd be willing to think about giving up Ingram for a third or a fourth round pick. But, you know, if Goodell says, hey, I'll give you the second round pick back and I'm taking away a sixth or I'm taking away a five, I wouldn't, because I just like the idea of having all these running backs, because my way of thinking in the NFL, you're going to need them. Like, they're all going to come to play. They're all going to get in there eventually, probably. So I like to have the depth at that position, and I'm not willing to swap that depth for a fourth round pick. But
yeah,
maybe
that's defensible. I think at some point though, you're strapped for cash, and
yeah,
you kind of got to blow up the defense. I mean, there's going to be significant turnover on the defensive end,
yeah,
and they may blow it up completely. You know, so it's going to be, you know, an eventful offseason. I really believe that, you know, between players getting cut, restructuring deals, and we're going to see. I mean, I think that the Saints offense is going to go largely untouched. The only real big question mark with that is left tackle. If they, you know, and I think Bushrod will hopefully come back, but that's the one big question mark. And then defensively, I think there's going to be a lot of moving pieces.
Yeah, I mean, it'll see. I think, you know, you've sort of converted me over to the theory that, hey, the cap issues aren't as grave as people make them out to be. Mickey Loomis can always finagle it. They'll create some room and they'll get some free agents. You know, and like you said, look, the Saints are in sort of a win now mode, which means some teams wouldn't be willing, you know, like a Kansas City. They're not going to say we're playing for now because they're picking first. But the Saints will be more than happy if a defensive guy falls out of the sky and they can get him at their price. The Saints are more than willing to redo some deals and say, you know what, we're going to redo a bunch of deals, but we can get OC Umanyura, or we can get, I don't know, just – pie in the sky, Buffalo cuts Mario Williams or something. We can get Mario Williams or whoever. And you know what? In 3 years, we are going to be fucked. But
yeah,
Screw it. It's Drew Brees' prime. We'll worry about 2016 when it's 2016. We're trying to get another trophy.
I think at some point you reach the point of no return where you're like, okay, our highest paid players aren't producing anymore. And
mm-hmm.
and that's the point. When you reach that point and you're up against the cap, you're like, okay, we need to fix our cap problem. So it's time to blow it up and reload. Get the cap to where we can start adding players, get a bunch of high draft picks so we can reload with some young talent.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's what the Colts did. And unbelievably, they made the playoffs in year one of their kind of retooling phase. And so they're going to be good next year too. But, you know, I think for the Saints, they're not there. I think, you know, they're going to have to revamp their defense some, and they're going to have to get younger and more talented. But Brees is the one that's making the most money, and he's, like you said, he's still in his prime, and the offense is still a top five NFL offense, and you can win with that. So they just need to get this defense a little bit better. So, you know, like you said, the cap is going to rear its ugly head when the Saints decide it's time to do it, you know, and it's time to blow it up, and it's time to move on. And until Drew Brees is with the Saints, I feel like they're going to try to push that problem as far back as possible.
Yeah, and I think, you know, that time, in football, it's not like baseball where it's kind of gradual and people age gracefully. In football, it's kind of like, it happens. And you're like, here it is. It, like with the Colts, they had it with Peyton Manning. Like, I mean, granted, Peyton Manning got injured and he missed the whole year. But that's how football kind of goes. Like, I think that's what's happened with the Steelers. Like, the Steelers are just freaking – they were a playoff team, and now they're old and beat up. And it just sort of happened.
I'll tell you this, Ralph. you know, Loomis is in place. Loomis has had a plan all along. Loomis isn't going anywhere. So from that standpoint, I think you be glad that you're a Saints fan and you've got a stable GM that's largely regarded as a guy that knows how to massage the cap, and you know, he'll keep doing that. If you look at the Panthers situation, they're screwed because not only are they a bad team with poor players and awful contracts, but and I realize they went 7-9 and beat the Saints twice, so you know I probably shouldn't run my mouth about them too much, but they just fired their GM. Their cap situation is worse than the Saints, and now they've got to figure out what to do about these overpriced players like Jonathan Stewart and D'Angelo Williams and all and Steve Smith and all these aging old players that aren't producing up to what they're being paid. And you know, if they gut the roster and get rid of all these guys, it's not like they can bring in some other guy with talent because they got to shed all this weight just to break even.
Yeah, and I mean,
their cap situation's a death trap, and they don't have stability at GM like the Saints. So when they hire this new guy, he's not going. It's not going to be his plan. He's going to walk into a mess.
Yeah, and that's the same thing with the Jets. The Jets are having a hard time finding somebody that wants the job because they probably go interview me and they're like, hey, let me see your books. And they're like, holy mother of God. Whereas Mickey Loomis, he did all these moves last year with Drew Brees and signing Lofton and signing all these people that we didn't think he would get. He did it knowing what was going to have to be done this year. So I'm sure he did all these moves and said, we're going to do all this, we're going to do A, and then we're going to do B, and we're going to be okay in 2013, you know?
Yeah. And, when we lose Carl Nix, and when we milk Drew Brees for every penny that he was worth until the very end, before signing him to a long-term deal, remember how angry you were when that news broke? Well, this is where it's paying dividends. This is the point. And, you know, later on, you start to see why Loomis did those things the way he did. And you've got to assume he saved some millions on Drew Brees by not just – and so many fans were clamoring, saying, pay Brees what he wants. Pay him now. Just whatever he wants. Just stroke a check. Get, you know, hand over a blank check. Loomis didn't do that. He milked the situation. And the Saints cap, while not good, is at least in better shape than it would have been had he done that.
Yeah, and I mean, they'll, you know, look, probably, to me, in the best-case scenario for the Saints is they make some moves, they get another trophy, you know, maybe get another two trophies, who knows, in the next 4 years. But in, like, probably in, like, 4 years, they're going to make some move that's going to be really reckless. And in, like, 2016 or 2017, we're going to be like, ah, that move to sign OCM and it's fucking them now. But and you'll be like, but Ralph, remember the two sacks he had in the NFC Championship game in 2014? You'd be like, yeah, totally worth it, you know?
Yeah. So, no, and look, I mean, we saw it happen to the Colts.
Yeah.
I mean, we saw what happened to a team that was literally good for a decade. They imploded completely last year. I mean,
the perfect time, by the way.
62-7. And, I mean, it was just an absolute debacle of a season. Now, they're fortunate. They got the first pick overall, and they hit Yahtzee with Andrew Luck. I mean, he didn't have an amazing season, but I think every Colts fan is feeling pretty good about Andrew Luck going into next year now after a year under his belt. And he was able to lead that team in the playoffs. Despite, you know, a rough coaching situation. So, and, you know, the Colts, I mean, their coaching situation was not all that different from the Saints. I mean, different circumstances, but, you know, still, I mean, pretty impressive what they were able to do with Arian stepping in. So,
yeah, I will say this. I think the Colts are going to regress next year because they were like, I think they were six,
I agree.
They were 6-0 in games decided by 7 points or less.
Right.
And their offensive line, if you watch that playoff game, which I'm sure all the people that listen to this podcast did, their offensive line is atrocious. So I think they'll regress next year because they were, like, according to the metrics.
I think that's fair.
But,
yeah,
I mean, so
I
what?
Fair,
I mean,
but my point remains,
yeah.
I mean, they were fortunate. I mean, once you blow it up, a lot of times year two is not that pretty.
No.
But there's going to be a time where Brady is going to retire. Mm-hmm. There's going to be a time where Breeze is done. And the same thing's going to happen on the Patriots, and the same thing is going to happen on the Saints. And you just hope that when that time comes, you're strong. You have a strong enough foundation that, like the Colts, you can rebound after a year and get back to being relevant. But, you know, that's the price you pay for a decade of good football. And the 49ers, after a decade of good football, I mean, you remember, God, how bad they were with Elvis Burbach.
It's like 2 decades for them.
Yeah, I mean, and so, yeah, so that's the thing. I mean, when you're really bad, you get the good pick, and that's where you got to hope you're hitting with Andrew Luck instead of Jonathan Sullivan.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see. I think the issue with the Colts is when it burns to the ground and you got to blow it up, you want it to be the year that like 2 and 3 franchise quarterbacks are coming out, like this year, not with like Kansas City, where they're picking number one, and they're like, who the hell are we going to pick? Manti Te'o, who got dump trucked by Auburn, you know, last night. And look,
Alabama,
yeah, sorry. To me, I would rather linebacker, I would rather Minter for LSU than Manti Te'o, but maybe I'm biased. Andrew, before we get out of here, I want to bring up a subject, and it might be touchy to some people. Could get a little heated, maybe, but I think I'm going to write a column about it for this week for WWL. I think it's time to say goodbye and put Get Crunk to rest and not play it anymore when the Saints score a touchdown. Look, it's awesome. When I hear it, it brings back memories. It was fun. It was fun for 3 years, but eventually something that's fun and gimmicky and all that, eventually, it goes from cool to Gangnam Style or the Macarena, or to put it in football terms, look, the Saints had cha-ching in the 90s. We still don't do cha-ching. We don't do who let the dogs out. You know, eventually, you just got to move on. And it's not like I have a replacement for Get Crunk after the touchdown, but something will come along, and it'll be just as fun. But it's just – it's time to sort of put it in the time capsule and remember it for 2009. I don't want to be doing Get Crunk in 2014.
I'm with you. I think it's Crunk. All good things must come to an end, Ralph.
Yep.
And you always want it. It's like the Barry Sanders retirement. You know, you always want to end gracefully like that. And you want to hang something on the shelf with good memories, not let it get stale. You know, you don't want it to become the career of Brett Favre, who, you know, in his last few seasons just completely soiled his name and his reputation. So, you know, and honestly, Kronk is approaching that territory.
Yeah,
it's literally been out for so long. And it's great when the Saints are winning and they win a Super Bowl. And, you know, even last year when they were 13-3, they don't win the Super Bowl, but it's fun because they're winning all the time and you're getting fired up. But the Saints lost a lot this year, and they lost a lot at home. And Kronk was a part of that, and so it doesn't have the winning tradition anymore. And there's going to need to be, I think it's time. You know, even though Sean Payton's coming back, and we're still in the Sean Payton era, and we'll be entering our seventh year. Is that right? Eighth year?
Eighth year.
Yeah. So we'll be entering our eighth year of his tenure. But I feel like kind of like the Katrina season. This season feels like a little bit of a rebirth. We'll see how much purging the Saints do with their roster. I mean, I think there's a good chance that we'll lose at least Vilma and Will Smith, who are some of the oldest veterans on the team, and Shanley and Henderson are some of the oldest veterans on the team, and Cedric Ellis, too. So, I mean, those five guys could easily be gone. So I think we'll see some purging, and, you know, we'll finally be done, you know, with the exception of that second-round pick. I mean, that's kind of the last death blow that Goodell gave to the franchise. So once the draft is done, all of the bounty penalties and all that stuff is in the rearview mirror. And while Sean Payton will be back and it's still under his watchful eye, I do feel like the season is going to be a little bit of a rebirth, and the Saints are going to be changing their identity a little bit. And you know, Brady will still be there, and they'll still have their core players, but I really do think it's time for a change. And so anyway, I think that whole big picture I feel like Kronk is a very small portion of that whole thing, where it's just time to purge, man. And Kronk was part of a great period when the Saints won a Super Bowl, and the Saints were dominating everyone in the Dome, and they were the greatest show on turf, and it was fun to watch. But we're moving on from that, and hopefully, you know, this future will have good memories too. But it's got to come with a different song. It's time for that rebirth. It kind of feels like that Katrina season in a way.
It does.
Much less dramatic, but you know, Bounty Gate was a historical event.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I'll be interesting to see. I don't think Sean Payton is not going to take a sort of FU position publicly towards the NFL. But I'll be interested to see how the Saints play in 2013 and if he's able to infuse his anger and resentment, and believe me, you know he has it, anger and resentment that he has towards the NFL, if he's able to some kind of way transfer that to the Saints and they play with a sort of purpose and anger that maybe you can kind of detect it if they run up the score a little bit, or they're just, you know, it'll be interesting to see, because Sean Payton that's one of his specialties, is motivation and that sort of thing. And we'll see if he's able to transfer that onto the field in 2013, Andrew.
I really think Sean Payton is going to come away from this a better coach, because, you know, I think anytime, I mean, you just look at what he's done. I mean, he's gotten in the best shape of his life. I mean, of his coaching life, certainly. He's running marathons. I mean, if you've seen him out in public, I mean, he looks like he's in great shape. And I think he's really dedicated himself to getting healthy. You know, he's dedicated himself to, while he spent time away from the game, you know, he has publicly said that he sits in front of a TV, watches the Saints game in quiet, and has a notepad, and he's just taking notes. And sometimes time away can be helpful, and certainly,
yeah,
I think he'll be a little rusty maybe when he starts. But I do think that time away, it's kind of like, you know, a guy that's biding his time. You know, it's like this,
yeah,
guy that has that much talent, and you give him that much time to prepare. You know, sometimes when he comes back even better. And I personally think, based on what I've seen from Payton during his time away from the Saints, I mean, I would say he became a worse coach if he was 300 pounds. You know,
yeah,
if he's on a couch and he wasn't doing anything, and you know, he came back and you could tell that he just ate a bag of chips every day and sitting on the couch and doing nothing. But he's really focused himself and dedicated himself. And so I really think he's going to come back refreshed. I think he's going to come back pissed off and motivated. And I really do believe that that's going to ultimately make him a better coach, which is that should sound be a warning signal to,
yeah,
everyone in the NFC South
that interesting,
we're not going to be fucking around next year.
The interesting thing to me is Sean Payton is one of those guys, and I think all great coaches are kind of like this. They tinker, you know. Bill Belichick is always like, he's going out to visit with Chip Kelly and say, hey, Chip Kelly, you're running this, hurry up, what the fuck is this? I'm going to take some of this and I'm going to use it with Tom Brady. And I think Sean Payton's like that. And with a year away from it, Andrew, where he's not worried about, I got a game plan every week, I got to, you know, make sure everybody's in line and you're in the grind of the year, I wonder, you know, not that he's going to come and, you know, get Tim Tebow off the scrap heap or anything completely radical, but I wonder if he's going to drop in some wrinkles for the Saints, and we're talking in like 2013 and it's like week three and I'm talking to you and you're like, Ralph, this shit they're running off, I ain't seen this before. And I'm not even making a suggestion of what it will be. I'm just saying that my guess is the way Sean Payton is, he's tinkered and he's thought of some things and he's going to drop them in that are going to be completely new and different, and not just little bitty wrinkles. I mean, things that people are going to be like, wow, the Saints are doing that now, you know, which, you know, will be a good thing for 2013. It sucked that he wasn't around for 12, but, you know.
Well, I mean, look, he's had a lot of time by himself. We know he's kind of a wizard, mad scientist, offensive,
yep,
genius. And when you're a head football coach, you're very much in a bubble. You know, you don't have time to really, beyond just studying the tape and studying your opponents, you don't really have time to develop your offense, see what other colleges are doing or other NFL teams are doing. And you're like, man, I really like that. And I could even tweak this thing and this thing to make it even better. Sean Payton has had an immense amount of time to do that. Watch TV, watch football. You know, he's watched a lot of football. He's watched a lot of games, a lot of college games. And so I really believe that based on the amount of time he spent doing all that stuff, you make a great point, and I fully agree with it, that he is going to come with some stuff that he's had the time to kind of build that when in the bubble as a head coach, he may not have had the time to think outside the box and come up with this stuff. So we may see some wacky stuff from him, and I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. Well, that'll be interesting. But one last thing before we hit the road, Andrew, as we've gone way over 25 minutes than we always do in the off. We're like, we're going to do it. That'll get us 20 minutes in the off. These people are like, we're at an hour. Atlanta, Seattle. Is Atlanta going to have another glorious playoff disappointment that will – the tears will taste so, so sweet on Sunday afternoon. Is that gonna happen?
I think Atlanta wins the game, but I there is hope.
Yeah.
I think that Seattle and the way they're built, they have a real shot. Now the Clemens injury hurts really bad because you know, the amount of pressure that he gets. I mean, he's an elite rusher, and you know, we talked about you know, having a defensive player that you have to game plan around, so, you know, the impact that makes. And so not having him is going to be tough. But they do have a good defense. Atlanta does not match up well against them. Atlanta's not good stopping the run. Marshawn Lynch is as good as there is. And Seattle mauls people in the running game. And I think Atlanta is going to take a beating in this game. So even if they survive it, and they have to go play, God forbid, they have to go play the 49ers the next week. I think they're going to be real beat up, you know, assuming the Niners beat the Packers, which is no given. But I think the Niners are just physically going to come in there. And if the Falcons have to play two games in a row like that, I just don't think they stand a chance. So, but I think the matchup's good. The reservation I have is I just have a hard time picturing Russell Wilson winning back-to-back road playoff games as a rookie. And so that's the X factor for me. But I definitely think the Seahawks have a shot. But my favorite right now in the NFC is the 49ers. I really feel like with Kaepernick, they have added a wrinkle to their offense to make them just a tiny bit more explosive, which they needed. And that defense is just scary. And they run the ball well. And I really think that they would come into Atlanta and kick the shit out of them.
Well, and I think Green Bay, to a, you know, they're going to have even a sort of the same difficulties the Saints had against the 49ers. I mean, the Saints sort of figured it out last year in the playoff game because their offense was at an all-time level. They got the 49ers blocked, and Drew Brees got hot, and they got themselves back in the game after having a terrible first quarter. But the Green Bay has shown when they went to – I mean, I know – everybody remembers the fact that, you know, the bad call they had in Seattle that cost them the game. But in that first half, Aaron Rodgers got sacked 8 times. So their line stinks. And Aaron Rodgers, his mobility and the fact that he's the best quarterback in football covers up a lot of their shittiness on their offensive line. And I just think if San Francisco can get ahead of them, I think they'll pound Aaron Rodgers into the dirt. You know,
I don't even think the Packers are going to try running against the 49ers.
Really?
I think they know that they can't do it, and I think they're going to spread it around. They're going to spread them out, you know, 4 wide, and Aaron Rodgers is going to say to his receivers, get open, I'm going to get rid of the ball as quickly as I can. You know, we know McCarthy is pass happy anyway, and I fully agree. I think Rodgers is going to take a beating. He's going to get sacks. He's going to throw picks, and I think it could get ugly.
Yeah, I have this feeling that it's going to be I have this feeling it's going to be Atlanta, San Francisco, and it's going to be
that's
just
my pick.
And I know a lot of people will say they're torn, but if it's Atlanta, San Francisco, but I won't have any problem rooting for San Francisco because While Saints fans, we may hate San Francisco, Andrew, San Francisco fans don't give a shit about us. I don't want Atlanta going to the Super Bowl in New Orleans because I have to deal with those people twice a year till I'm in the dirt. You know?
Look, none of us like the 49ers. That's clear. I mean, the way the last 2 years have played out, a lot of bad blood has developed between us and them. You can't compare that with, and I know we've had some history at the 49ers dating back to the NFC West, but you can't compare that to the history of the battle for the South of Saints Falcons, and which to me, arguably that rivalry was at an all-time high this year, just in terms of Atlanta truly talking about if we're going to have a chance in the playoffs, we've got to get over that hump of the Saints. The Saints were washed up and they were done this pretty much all season. And Atlanta was still talking us up like, you know, the Saints were a postseason team. So I think they were very much in their head and looking. It still, to me, remains the biggest, the most underrated rivalry in sports. For them to come into New Orleans and win, for me, it would just be a disaster, especially after Alabama the last 2 years. I mean, from a fan sporting perspective, it's been in the Miami Heat won in the NBA. I mean, it's just like, could the year in sports, like, possibly get personally worse for me?
Well, I will say this about Atlanta is that, you know, we talk about these last 3 years for the Saints, and look, it's been awesome. They went 13-3, 11-5, and 13-3 before this year. So that's 37 wins. That's the second most – it's tied for the most wins in the NFL. But the Saints, they had a Super Bowl victory, a playoff win against Detroit, and an all-time classic playoff game against San Francisco that's really – going to live on, I think, and you're going to unfortunately be seeing it on NFL films and such. And it was – the ending was painful. But it – I mean, if you're just a fan and you're not a fan of the Saints or San Francisco, you watch that playoff game, you're probably like, holy shit, this is one of the best playoff games I've ever seen. So the Saints have 37 wins, a Super Bowl, and a playoff win and all that stuff. Atlanta, Andrew, they have 30 – stake. They've gone 13-3, 10-6, 13-3. If they don't win against Seattle, they're going to have 36 wins over 3 years and no playoff wins to show for it. I mean, that would just be horrific for their fan base and delicious for us.
Yeah, and I think how do they rebound from that? I think it's going to be hard for Atlanta to duplicate what they did this year.
No, you can't. It's hard. It's really, really hard to duplicate 13 wins. I mean, even the Saints showed that. They went 13 wins. They won the Super Bowl. They won 11 games the next year. But really, that was with duct tape and Drew Brees bailing their ass out a bunch of times late in games, and it finally caught up with them in Seattle. That 11-win Saints team, Andrew, was really more like a 9-win team that got by on the "we just won the Super Bowl, motherfucker" swagger. And it just – you don't win. You just don't – you know, it's not college. You don't just churn out double-digit wins on the assembly line. So it'll be interesting, but I'm gonna say Atlanta's gonna get it, ever so slightly. But Andrew, as always, people go to his website. He's got the Saints final grades. It's off season, but he's still churning out stuff. And I know you want to read your reading columns because I got 600 million emails from you on my last column, and the Saints weren't even playing. So I know you still want your Saints stuff. So go to thesaintsnation.com. Andrew, as always, thanks for joining us, and we'll talk to you down the line when hopefully Atlanta has been eliminated and we can drink the tears of sadness.
If that happens, Ralph, I will drink a pint of rosé and bar sweat.
Oh, delicious. All right, thanks, Andrew. So long. For Andrew Juge, for Ralph Marlboro, so long. See ya.